You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I am so excited. Welcome, everybody. We are starting a new series, Deer Camp, Homesteady Deer Camp. And what we're going to do for the month of October into the month of November is we're going to be going every week, updates from the field, from whether it's a little bit of hunting, whether it's a little bit of archery hunting, deer hunting, bird hunting. We'll include all our outdoor adventures in the fall. And that's one of the reasons I have my special guest. So if you are on our email list, you already know there's a special guest tonight. Fan favorite, been on the show a bazillion times, and he's here tonight. And he's going to be here through all of Homesteady's Hunt Camp. He's actually one of my Hunt Camp buddies, Uncle Bourbon. Welcome to the show.
All right. Glad to be here tonight.
I wish you were here in person for Hunt Camp, but that's brewing, right? Maybe something in the works?
I think so.
All right, good. Because we've had a lot of good times, a lot of good hunt camps together, and no doubt tonight we're going to share some of those stories. Here's what I want from you. If you're watching right now, first off, smash the likes. Let's get the likes on the live stream up. Hunting content gets suppressed. It doesn't get enough airtime on YouTube as it is. And I think hunting is a great way for homesteaders to put meat in the freezer, learn to butcher on an animal that you didn't raise. A lot of really good stuff about hunting. I always picture hunting is like just a major part of homesteading, and I'm surprised more homesteading content isn't about hunting. So that's one of the reasons we're doing this this series this fall, Deer Camp, just to try to bring hunting back into the conversation with homesteaders. And I know a lot of you watching are hunters. So in the comments section, two things. After you smash the likes, guess. You're going to find out later how our opening day went. Did we see any deer? Did we get a deer opening day? So comment. And also, if you're a hunter, let me know. You'll see On the Fly in the chat box. That's Uncle Bourbon. That's another show he's working on. But let us know in the chat box if you are a hunter, what you've got this season, what you're looking for. I think Noah was already saying he's putting free-range turkeys away, so that's exciting. Free-range turkeys are delicious. Wild turkeys are delicious. So, both really good. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and welcome you in the chat box. Uncle Bourbon, what have you been up to this fall?
I'm just dreaming about gravy now that you mentioned turkey. So,
all right, so I have a confession to make. I've only had wild turkey. This tells you how good of a turkey hunter I am. I've only had wild turkey once.
Are you talking about the beverage Or are we talking?
No, I'm talking about wild, you know, me in the woods, true, wild turkey. Now, I've had a couple friends willing to share, but I've only got one wild turkey in all my years of hunting. So hopefully this fall we will change that.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, we'll see. We already got a super chat. Ben Newman, thank you so much, Ben.
Yeah.
He says, hey, man, great topic. Doesn't get talked about a lot. So true, Ben. I wish hunting was more in the conversation, more popular amongst the homesteading world. So we're going to hopefully change that. And the kids are, of course, jumping up and down. The kids, just so anybody knows, we split the super chats with the crew. My older kids run the sound, and they're pretty thrilled. I saw them, the minute I see them start to do the wave, I know they got a super chat. So. Now, I got a bone to pick with you, Uncle Bourbon, because I think you and me feel differently about opening day. I know we feel differently about opening day. I look at it like a holiday. It is literally like the whole year. It's the day I look forward to the most. And it doesn't matter what season. That's the fun thing I think about being an outdoorsman is you have opening day of fishing in the spring. And that could be multi, right? You have your opening day, you can fish for maybe bass, opening day for trout, opening day for, you know, something else. And then in the fall, you have opening day of archery, opening day of gun season. Tomorrow, my oldest son and I are headed out for opening day of youth pheasant. In Pennsylvania, there's like 13 different opening days. And for me, they are all like a holiday. I take the day off of work, if that's what you call this. Right, I take the day off of work and me and the kids go spend time on opening day. You don't even go out for opening day.
No, not, well, fishing, especially fishing, because that's where I'm going to spend most of my time most of the year, on the water. Opening day for me is great because that means everybody leaves the water and now I have all the water to fish. Funding season, anyhow. But when it comes to fishing, I never really stop. So there is no opening day for fishing for me. So I don't view it as a holiday there that way. But when it comes to opening day of hunting, I think...
A little different.
A little different, you know. Now that we're separated by this distance, you know, not having my hunting buddies as much around, it makes it a little bit tougher. But,
a little tougher.
But definitely when you have that around, or that's the way to do it.
Yeah. Now, for those watching who... Uncle Bourbon's been on the show many times, but for those who don't know you, avid fly fisher. Your name in the chat box is On the Fly, working on a show on the Flycast. We'll hear more about that later, maybe in our series. Also, a fishing guide. Tell us a little bit about like what you're busy doing year-round as a fishing guide.
Yeah, I mean, as a fishing guide, just spending a lot of time on the water, guiding different people if they want to be guided. If not, just a lot of times on social media and everything or some of the avenues, I'm giving away information. People are like, hey, I'm coming to your area, or I'm going to fish this area. Hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, because not every fly shop in the world is going to tell you that the conditions are not great, don't come. The majority of the good upstanding citizen ones definitely will, but the rest of them may not. So there are some, you know, unfortunately, some people out there that will take advantage of you that way, but I'm letting you know what's going on, or I'm connecting you with the guide buddies that I know that are going to up your game. So, you know, whether it's you want to fish for a specific target, like some of my best buddies are fishing for pike, or we're going to go up steelhead fishing soon up in upstate New York.
Oh, are you going? You planning?
Yeah, and this month we're definitely going to hit some pike fishing, which is always a fun time to do. So
we're going to have to talk about that that New York trip. We're going to talk about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
well, I digress, because as being more of a person who likes the West Coast, I won't call the steelhead that we call our Great Lakes rainbows steelhead. I'll get in a fight with all my Western friends if I do that. So, but hey, listen, they fight almost as good, so it doesn't matter. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I always enjoy whenever we were together, we try to maximize, whether it's springtime, and it's like, you know what, we're going to hit the turkeys in the morning and we're going to go to the trout streams in the afternoon and we're going to forage some mushrooms along the way. You grew up in an outdoors family. You guys, your family was active in fishing and hunting. And then our entire you know, friendship, the years we spent together in the outdoors, there's always something to do outside. And that's kind of the thing I love about this idea of opening day, is there's always one around the corner. And whether or not your opening day is a successful one, and remember the chat box, guests, let me know what you think. Did we have a successful opening day in terms of, did we get ourselves a deer opening day or not? It's just the beginning, and then there's always another one coming. There's literally right now, last week was the opening of archery. Tomorrow's the opening of pheasant. In a couple weeks, we'll have the opening of pheasant youth. A couple weeks, we'll have pheasant for, everybody. And me have had so much fun.
You're going to save those feathers for me, right?
That's what I was going to say. We've had so much fun out together. We've gone pheasant hunting. You tie flies, so we've saved the flies. So it just all works together. I'm really glad you're joining on this deer camp for the next couple weeks. But we definitely are hopefully going to plan some, maybe you'll see some video footage of this in person up this fall. We're going to dive into kind of covering what we're doing early season here, because we have been super busy. Opening day for us, archery season comes in October, which is different. Back in the day when we lived in Connecticut, which is where Uncle Bourbon's from and where he's at right now, our opening day was in September. So we were all summer long prepping, getting stands ready, getting blinds ready. And now in PA, we're a little bit later. We're in October. It gives us a little extra time. But it seems to me like it doesn't matter how much time I have. I'm a procrastinator by nature.
You're always running out of time. I don't care who you are.
I literally yesterday put up a blind. I have another one that I have to work on. We had a wicked year this year in our woods, in our area, for bees. I don't know what happened this year. There were so many ground nests, and we actually were out berry picking one day. My parents were visiting, and we got a really nice blackberry patch on the homestead. And every year, this blackberry patch gets bigger and bigger and more berries. So we were out there with, grandma and grandpa, the grandkids are all out there picking berries. And we had the four-wheeler out there. You know, we got the UTV so everybody can jump in it. And we're picking and we're getting ready to go, and they're going deeper and deeper in for the berries. And all of a sudden the screaming started, bees, bees, bees. And the bees swarmed, and they swarmed my mom. I don't know what she did, but they went right for her. Everybody else was pretty safe. My middle son, he got hit once, but my mom, they were chasing her. We jumped in the UTV and we started driving, 40 miles an hour out of there. And the bees are following my mom. Just bzz, 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 bzz. So this year, since that day, since we had that bee encounter, we've been going into the woods to get ready for deer season. And I've been looking like, all right, where are the bees? And sure enough, I went out with two of my younger kids, because I try to get everybody involved in the prep for the season. And I went out with a couple of the younger kids, and we were going to find one of our ground blinds. We had a wicked snow last season, and it collapsed two of our ground blinds. They're those little pop-up blinds that, you go and you put them out in the woods. And both of them got collapsed on trees, limbs fell down and stuff. So I was going out to retrieve them, see if I could fix them up. And I started with the two younger ones. We went out, we found one of them, we started pulling on it, and all of a sudden the swarm started. But I was ready this time, so I yelled, run! And they booked it. At this point, they've learned, if daddy yells run in the woods, there's a good reason. They booked it, I booked it, and nobody got stung. So we were all right. We, every year, we're pretty busy with prepping for ground blind hunts, mostly for the kids, and prepping deer stands. I take the older ones up in some tree stands. And one of the things we do every year with our ground blinds to get ready, we try to brush them in really, really well. And the biggest things we spend our time with pre-season, getting ready for opening day, is brushing in. We do a little bit with the tree stands, but we do a lot of brushing in with the ground blinds. We find different spots on the property where we can put up a blind. Beautiful fall afternoon. The kids and I are about to set up a hunting blind. I love setting up blinds to be kind of like a family event. All the kids get out, we find a spot, we look for deer sign. And then we put it up together, and then later on we'll be hunting out of it together. So let's get started. I like the blinds, especially for the little kids. It's easy to get in and out. It hides a lot of their movement.
Wave.
I always bring heavy-duty zip ties with me. We cut a couple limbs off of other trees in the area. We zip tie them to the blind. I also do a couple of, I'll cut a couple trees near it. And actually what I'll try to do is I'll hinge cut a few trees, small ones, and just lean them over the blind to brush it in so it's well hidden. So we got a pretty well brushed in blind here.
Let's go far away, see if we can see it. Oh no.
I'm about to do a test. It's called the 100 yard test.
We're gonna go in and see if this will work.
Oh yeah. This'll work. What do you think?
I think it's good, but
yep, it's good, bud. We just need to open up some shooting lanes now. Takes a while, but with all the kids helping, we managed to cover up that blind pretty much completely, and we're invisible to the deer. Fun way to get the kids involved. I love setting blinds up like that. We do it with tree stands too. Everybody helps, but the blind days are one of my personal favorite.
We're the stash.
Yeah,
man. I mean, I haven't seen that look. I haven't seen that look since VHS, man. We're kicking it old
people
school.
People are gonna think I like have a fake mustache that I just put on for the show and I forgot.
Did you? Is that a fake stash?
If you're listening to the podcast version of this, that little video clip we played, we actually filmed it last year. And the reason I wanted to share that setup was a successful setup. So this mm-hmm. is just a good tip for people watching. If you're getting ready for deer season and you do a lot of archery or even for gun hunting, it's good to get your stuff hidden. That blind setup, me and the kids set up last year before I had a mustache. So there explains that. Chat box went wild, like, what? what we try to do is we find a good spot where that blind will fit, where we can get it nice and flat. We get it pinned and staked to the ground, put a couple chairs in it so that, you know, there's a good comfy spot to sit. And then as you see, we cut limbs from the surrounding trees. And actually, one of the things that I explained in the beginning when, I don't know, my sound wasn't working there, we will try to hinge cut trees. So I will try to find a couple small trees that are near where the blind's going that aren't good trees, not high quality trees, not something that I want to let keep growing on the property. And we'll hinge cut them. And what a hinge cut, what that means is you're taking the tree and you're trying to cut it about halfway through with the idea that you don't want to cut it all the way through. So you cut about halfway through and then you start pulling or pushing on it as it's being cut. And it will generally, it'll wind up hinging over like this. You know, if you're listening to the podcast, basically it forms like a 90 degree, elbow. And ideally it's still connected. And the reason why, if you can only cut about half of it, is that tree will actually stay alive. Not every time, sometimes they die. But if you do a good hinge cut, the tree will stay alive. And what that means is you will have, if you do it with a tree on either side of your blind, you form like an X around it, hinge cut trees, all the foliage will stay on those trees like all the rest of the fall foliage does, as long as it does. But every season, if you do a good hinge cut, that tree stays alive. That blind will be really, really well hidden by that really, really good foliage coming back every year. And actually, you'll find deer, depending on the tree, they like to eat hinge cut trees. So not only are you providing your blind with some cover, but you got a little allowable bait, whether your state lets you bait or not. They can't tell you can't have a tree, you know, down in the field where the deer are going to come munching on it. So if they're long trees and they're sticking out 10 yards away from your blind, you might have yourself a good little legal attractant. So that's something that we're real busy with this time of year. And we're not even done. We still got a lot to go. But keeps us busy, keeps the kids busy. I got one more blind that's still collapsed in the woods, and that's the one that was near the bee's nest. And we still have yet to retrieve it. The minute we went to, you know, go get it, the bees were buzzing. So we're going to wait till a cold morning comes and we can pull that out of there. Early season, bow season. Have you hunted bow season early in a couple years, Uncle Bourbon?
Yeah, not too many years ago.
Back when we were in Connecticut, we always spent a lot of time together. And I remember, was it opening day a couple years ago back when we were in CT that you wound up getting that nice doe?
It wasn't opening day, but it was the opening week.
Opening week. I believe you had taken a bit of a hiatus from archery hunting, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. It had been a few years since I had even picked up a bow. In fact, I think I had given a bow to a buddy probably 10 years before that and hadn't picked up a bow until that year. Again, and you gave me one of your old bows floating around, which was good.
Yep. Yeah, I was trying to get you back into it. I love getting my friends back into the woods. And we'd spent plenty of time fishing. But I was like, come on, you got to get back in the woods, do some archery. And you're like, I don't have a bow. So I'm a bit of an enabler. And we were working together that year. So at lunch break, yeah. I remember you and me were practicing, right?
Mm-hmm. In early morning, we'd go up on the hill sometimes and even look, if we could sneak in a little time earlier.
My poor old man. My dad, we were both working for my dad in excavation, and he'd like have us running different jobs. And we'd be showing up early, like, oh man, that's a good spot. Let's see if we can get something.
Yep. Or our lunch break, we'd be hiking, looking for falls.
Yep, looking for stuff, shooting bows at lunch. Dad'd be like, come on, got to get back to work. But we wound up, I remember, we had a couple properties set up that year. And this one property in particular, early season, it's a gem. The property is a little 10-acre piece. When you're hunting in Connecticut, everything's a 10-acre plot. Comment, let us know in the chat box, like, what are you guys used to hunting? Is it 1,000 acres of public land? Is it 100 acres of private? Is it 1 acre? Literally in Connecticut, we had properties we hunted because there's not a lot of big properties. We'd have a 3-acre property where the house was here, and with our bow and arrow, we'd be sneaking out around back.
Yeah, we're fortunate because with bow and arrow, there's literally almost no size limit. As long as your neighbors are cool with the deer ending up on their property, you can basically do it.
That's the hard part about a small one is like, you shoot it and then it jumps over 3 neighbors' yards and you're knocking on every door. Do you mind if we go blood trailing through your backyard? Like, that's why my dog was so bloody.
Yeah.
But this place, we had just gotten permission. A buddy of ours who's been on the show years ago, he was a landscaper. And actually, you saw him recently. We did, back in the summer, we had a bit of a fishing adventure. And all our outdoors buddies were on that.
That's right.
And our buddy James, he's a landscaper, so he would get us a lot of good properties because it was places where he was going and he was planting garden beds and the deer were eating them up. And he's, saying to people like, hey, we could take care of those deer for you that are eating all those flowers. So he got us this 10-acre place, and the way it was laid out, it was kind of like a nice little valley out behind a house, 10 acres, good marshy wood plot that surrounded a valley, which was a nice field, and the deer would filter out of the marsh and they would come into that field and they would feed. And then up behind the field, there was a hill and there were apple trees all along that field edge. So it was like they had bedding. And this is something, if you're trying to get your first deer, you always got to be thinking about deer are edge creatures. So where do you set up, right? You find a place where their bedding meets their feed and where they're headed to for more feed. One of the best places you can hunt is a staging area where they're going on their way to more feed, because generally they'll start in that staging area and then head out. And I remember this, we had set up a ground blind at a point in some cedar trees, and you hadn't hunted it. Like you had said, it had been years and years, right?
And, oh no, it had, I don't even want to, it had to be at least 10 years
right?
since I actually
a decade. Bow hunted. And me and James had been bow hunting for like 5 years at this point.
Yeah.
And, bow hunting, you go out 10 times and, eight times you don't see anything. And then one time you get him and he was at 40 yards and you started to pick up your bow and it squeaked and he took off running. So you're like, I'm going to do it, guys. I'm going to get back in the woods. And so we had that blind all set up. We actually went and put that blind up, didn't we?
Yeah.
And you probably remember, like, we did the whole thing, right? I remember digging out the floor so there wouldn't be any noise, brushing it in.
And, oh, yeah, that was a tight blind.
And you got to hunt that spot opening week. We had already gone out. James had gone out, not seen anything. I had gone out. You went in first night. What happened? First night, not just night of the year. First night of you hunting in a decade.
Yeah, first night hunting in a decade. I'm in the blind, and it was a nice September night, as it would be here. A little on the cool side, which was nice. It was perfect. But we end up, I'm in the blind, and all of a sudden, basically after a couple hours of just sitting there and not really much happening, all of a sudden they start filtering down. And it wasn't just like a few, it was a bunch. There had to be at least 10 or 12 deer come through this field.
I remember you were texting me the whole time.
At one point, yeah, at one point I'm in the blind and I have a deer within 5 feet of the blind. But at this point, just because of the way it came in so quickly and with the just the everything that was going on, didn't even have time to draw on it. So I just had to sit there. And I remember looking dead into the blind, like right at me. And I'm like, all right, look down at the ground and don't look at this thing, okay? And it started to move off. And finally, I'm like, okay, it's getting late. But I didn't want to take a hasty shot.
When you have a, this is a good thing. When you have a deer staring at you, you said you look at the ground. Is that what you do if a deer is looking at you?
I like to do that. I just think that, you know, yeah. I don't know if it's reality or not, but I don't want to look it dead in the eyes because I think it's looking right at me and it knows what I'm there. So
next time we're hunting together and we're stocking up on a deer and it starts to notice us, you're never going to look at me the same way again, because here's my secret. This is what I always do. I don't even know if I've told. I think I've told my kids this tip. I will, the minute a deer's got eyes on me, I will hum The Sound of Music. I believe animals have like, you know, that sixth sense. They can tell a predator, you know, they like know what's going on.
Yeah.
But like, how can you get predator vibes from Julie Andrews, right?
That's a good idea. I like that.
So I'll be like creeping up and I'll be like, and as soon as they look at me, I'm like, works every time.
All right. I like it.
Guys, chat box, let me know who's going to be humming Sound of Music this fall. So this deer looks in, he looks at you, you start humming Sound of Music. What happens next?
So eventually the deer start to move on, and now they've the majority of them have left and started migrating down. If you remember that property, they had to come down the hill through the wooded area from like a water spot, and then would go into what we thought was like a bedding area after they migrated through a feeding area. And so it was getting to be sunset or close to that, really close to like, I don't really want to take a shot. It's going to be like around that cusp of dark where we're done, you know, in Connecticut legally. But all of a sudden there's a deer and it's turned broadside to me, and it's 40 yards away at least. And, you know, we just decided that it was a Godspeed John Glenn moment, as we named the arrow later in retrospect. If you haven't figured out, I'm a space fan, you know.
Yeah, all of Uncle Bourbon's arrows, this is something I always do. I always name my arrows, and I used to put little pictures on the fletching so they had a personality. And all of your arrows were named, he's an acid nerd. All of your arrows, what did you have? You had John Glenn.
John Glenn.
Apollo 13 was that bad arrow that went a little wonky.
Yeah. Buzz Aldrin arrow was the best though, come on. I mean, it cold cocked anything it got in the way, trust me. Even on camera, it would do it, no. But it was a long shot, 40 yards to take, you know, or 40 yards plus first shot. But I was like, you know what? No guts, no glory, let's go for it. It was a safe shot only because it was turned broadside completely, this deer. And the light was still good enough to take the shot. So I took the shot, heard the arrow make the impact. The deer, you know, leapt and wheeled out of there. And at that point, I just sat still, especially because it was dark. Just waited it out. You didn't want to force it or push it. And I remember, I'm sure I was texting you like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And Coach James probably.
Yep.
In our little chat. And so then I went over to check, and there wasn't really a lot of blood there, which was kind of weird. I didn't see my arrow on the ground, so I'm like, all right. But at that point, it was dark. We decided, let's not look now. Let's go back early in the morning. So other than a fitful night of lack of sleep for me.
Yeah, that's right.
We got back over there at like, what, 5 a.m.?
Yep. Because before work, we had work to go to. In the,
yeah.
Right?
We had work that day. Yep.
Yep.
So totally went there the next morning. We looked. And I remember the tracking was really hard. We did find some blood, and then we tracked it, and we kept tracking it. We were looking, and we worked our tails off to find this deer. It did not go far.
Nope.
The only good thing about it was it went up the hill towards the water, which was also along the driveway. So
that's
we
right.
found the deer, this beautiful 90-pound doe, laying against the tree, you know, right about 10 feet from the grass. So all I had to do was gut it, drag it 10 feet, put it in the back of the truck, and take it home.
Connecticut hunting, man. Like, it can't not be next to the driveway.
No.
It's like right there. That was one of my favorite hunts. Not only...
But I don't think we took... What was that? I mean, it might have only been... Was that 75 yards from
I
where
the deer was struck? I think we counted 75 yards from where you hit it. Yeah. Yeah, I think
but it took us over an hour
minutes.
And a half to track at that 75 yards just because it had hit just a little high. It was like a liver shot, if I remember right.
Yep.
It stayed in, put most of the blood, but yeah.
You did the right thing. You knew with archery, you know, if any of you are newer to archery hunting or have done it in the past, archery is one of those things where there's a lot of room for error, and the best thing you can do is if you're not sure, back out, give the deer a little bit of time, and you did the right thing. Yeah. You backed out. You didn't disturb anything. You didn't jump anything. The trail,
especially with that sight. I mean, the fact that there were over a dozen deer down in the field that evening, we couldn't ruin that spot. It was our first year hunting that spot too. So it was like, can't blow it up. Not first night.
Yep. And like you said, the hit, because of the deer was up on a hill, and you where you were shooting from. The hole from the arrow was a little high, so it was a hard trail. And I remember one of the things I love most about having buddies to enjoy the outdoors with, I love going on other people's trails. I love tracking with other people on there. Whenever I have a deer that's hit and I'm blood trailing for myself or for my kids, I'm way more nervous. I'm emotionally invested. I want to get that deer, and I'm stressed. I go on a buddy's trail, I get to be like Sherlock Holmes, like, it's elementary. Now, I'm really bad on a blood trail because, as Uncle Bourbon knows, I'm colorblind. So
yeah, that did not help us.
Looking for red dots on green grass, not great for me. Over the years, that has actually helped me get better at blood trailing. When I finally learned, if any of you out there are colorblind, you'll realize, like, oh, this is a problem. It's really hard to find deer. So I've learned some extra tips, and maybe we'll talk about that later in the season. We'll do an episode that'd be a good one on trailing. But I love going on other people's tracking jobs because there's no stress. It's just fun. It's just, all right, I'm out with my buddies trying to find a deer. And that's one of my favorite memories, going with you on
easy
that.
For you guys. You guys got to sleep that night. I'm the one who's thinking there's about 50 million coyotes in the state, and they're all on that property that night.
That's the truth, man. Coyotes.
Because you know, in Connecticut, that's the way it is.
Oh, yeah. Yep. They're all over. They are all over.
There's more coyotes than deer, especially on the property that we were working on with Dad that year.
Oh, yeah. Yep. They're everywhere. And, man, if you're trying to hunt coyotes, you know they're harder to hunt than the deer. They're harder to see. They're the ghosts of the woods. But man, they'll get to your deer fast. But yours, they didn't, right? That was totally fine.
We were really surprised they didn't. Yeah.
Yep. So,
especially in that location, because I mean they run across the roads right down there, no problem. Like, that's common. We had a good question before. We can talk about it.
Yeah,
if
let's
want.
Do it. Let's take a question. We are going to do for the Homesteady Pioneers. We're going to have a little bit of an after party, so we will cover a few more questions there. But yeah, what was the question?
So Frankenstein 2087 asked, "Do you prefer to hunt from a blind/stand, or do you prefer to stalk?"
Oh man. Okay.
I know that's such a good question.
This is something that in our house, we're having a little bit of. My kids are getting older, and they're finding their own way. And they're developing all their own, you know, what they want in the world. And Uncle Bourbon, you guys, the reason I call him Uncle Bourbon, he's basically my adopted brother, and he is, my kids call him Uncle Bourbon. He's like one of their uncles, and he's just close family member, friend for years, and so he's spent a lot of time with my kids out in the woods, hunting, fishing, all mm-hmm. these things. So you know the personalities we're dealing with here. And my son does, my oldest does not like to sit still. He nope. does not like to sit still. So hunting for him, sitting still in a blind for, you know, hours and hours and hours. And like, you know how it is, especially when you're a dad taking your kids hunting for the first time. And you're like, okay, all right, settle down. You want a snack? It's like, yeah, I want a snack. Where's it? No, stop moving. I'll grab it. No, don't. You hand them like, they'll have like a bag of chips and they're like, no. I literally had to teach my daughter how to eat a Pringle with one bite. Cause I was like, you got it. Just, So my son.
Hey, wait. You got to just start bringing more gobs out there, man.
Yeah, that's the problem. Any noise. We don't have enough gobs to keep us fed. So my son, this year, we've been watching The Hunting Public. We love that YouTube channel. We've been watching a lot of their stuff. And I watch a few others. I watch Midwest Whitetail. I watch the Heartland Bowhunter guys. And everybody's got their own styles. I'm a huge fan of Grant Woods. I watch his stuff, growinggear.tv. Comment, guys, in the comment box if you have some channels you like to watch that cover hunting. Those are my favorites. But The Hunting Public guys, they're always moving. They're always going to new places and trying new mm-hmm. things. And they're doing lots of stalking. And my son is like, I want to do that. So generally, for the last like 5 years, I have gravitated, to answer Frankenstein's question, I have gravitated myself to very, very sedentary whitetail hunting. I hardly move. And I think the biggest reason for that is we hunt private land. We hunt mostly our own farm now. We have about 200 acres to hunt on the farm. And if you move around 200 acres, you're going to spook all the deer out off your property and they're never coming back. Yeah, if you do it a lot, if you keep, especially the big bucks and things. But if you have access to public land, if you have room, I used to do a lot more stalking back when I was a new bow hunter. I actually got my first deer off the ground, stalking, spotting, stalking 50 acres. And my first couple deer were stalking off the ground, and that was with a bow. So it was a pretty good stalk. We're thinking about maybe getting back into it a little bit this year because he really wants to. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll go on a couple public land adventures, spot and stalk. Yeah. I think that's
a good thing because at the end of the day, let's face it, maybe the indigenous people of this country, it was their land as much as it was the animals' land. But it's the deer own your farm. I hate to tell you that. and that is their domain. And there's a reason they're still alive on their domain. So when we're sneaking up on them, we're nowhere near as good as they are.
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy. He's going to hate me for that answer. But
it's so many more challenges are added to the mix when you're going in stalking on them. If you can pattern them, figure out where they're going to be and when and tuck into a blind. Plus, with kids, there's so many more elements added in that make it more difficult that it's just good to control the situation. So I'm 100% now. During rifle season on our own property, I hardly stalk. Most of the time, I'm sitting in a blind or in a tree stand.
I think, like you said, and also it's going to depend on what you're hunting for and where you're hunting too. I mean, out west where you've got wide open lands, you're in, you know, mainly alpine grasslands. Yep. You can stalk because you're going to take a long shot.
Yep.
Different story for an elk or something out there, but where we are, where the woods are so tight, I mean,
the visibility
makes it a lot more challenging.
I mean, you can do it, but it is so much more challenging. But maybe a good thing
to hone some of our
skills. That's it. So I think what we're going to try to do this year, we once in a while we'll sneak off. We do a lot of public land hunting for birds, and we're going to be talking about that in this special series. We'll do a whole episode talking about bird hunting and using dogs and stuff. That's one of my big passions too. We've got a lot of good bird hunting stories to share, so everybody stay tuned. But that I think we're going to add to this year. Maybe we'll plan something if you sneak down for a hunt camp this year. This is kind of cool. We have a history we actually have been hunting this property where we now live. This farm has been in the family. So since I, you know, was dating Kendra, I was coming to visit this farm. And this has always been hunt camp. For me and for all my buddies, this was actually, we would like plan a trip where we would visit Pennsylvania and we'd all get out-of-state tags. A bunch of Connecticut boys would come to the big woods of PA. And the Uncle Bourbon, me, and our buddy James, the three of us would come to the property in a week. We would get here. We would hang a bunch of tree stands. We'd put in a bunch of blinds and brush them in. And then we'd hang some game cameras. That was like day one and day two. Didn't we usually, like, you can't hunt Sundays in PA. Now, that's changing a little bit. But I think what we would do, we used to, like, travel down on a Saturday. And then Sunday.
Set up Sunday.
Because you couldn't hunt. Sunday was like, get everything up. Put up stands. Brush in blinds.
Make sure your mother-in-law was making us gobs.
Oh, man. Those were the good old days. Now it's not a vacation. There's less gobs.
Someone's asking, what's a gob?
Oh, what's a gob?
Oh, yeah. I know. That was also a question I was going
to ask. All right. So first we'll cover what's a gob, and then we'll get into that great question. And maybe we can get a few more details on what they want to talk about specifically. So what is a gob?
Sure.
Western Pennsylvania specialty. Like, it's literally Western PA food. It was a snack that was made for coal miners. Guys going deep into the mines, working in the dark all day. The word gob actually is a mining reference. A gob was something they would find in the mines. And so they started calling these big black, what they're essentially, if you've ever seen a whoopie pie, if you're from maybe the Northeast, you would look at it and you would say, oh, that's a whoopie pie. But it's not a whoopie pie. And don't you dare call it a whoopie pie, because it's a gob. And it's different. So a gob.
No, not in PA. Don't call it in PA. No.
A gob looks like a whoopie pie, but it's very, very different. It's two, like, half round cakes with icing in the middle. And the two cakes come together like this, and it's full of icing.
Yeah.
Like a sandwich. And you eat
usually
it.
Usually a secret family recipe.
Yes, absolutely secret family recipe. We talk about gobs from time to time, we never share recipes. And we have a family recipe that is so good.
Yeah.
Like, I have searched Western PA for a gob that beats my mother-in-law's. And whether or not she watches this episode, this is not sucking up. She knows it's the truth. Because I've tried to find a better one. I have searched. I've bought them. No. Paid for them. I've had other people's. My mother-in-law's gob is the best. The best I've ever had. So... we'd have everything set up on Sunday and then Monday morning through the following Saturday. And the goal was usually Saturday was butcher day. So it was like we had a 5-day period to fill some tags.
Hunt like crazy.
Yeah. And it was every morning, every evening.
Oh, we had contests. Remember who could hold out for the gob the longest in the stand the first thing in the morning? You know, how many trains went by?
Oh, man. These kids and their snacks now.
Yeah.
They will burn through the snacks so fast. That's one of our, like, the ways I can keep them out hunting longer is if I control the snacks. If I let them have the snacks when they want them, we're done hunting in an hour.
Yeah.
If I keep the snacks, like, oh, you want to go in? Well, I got another candy bar if you're interested. Our opening day, how did it go? You've guessed. Some people have said, yes, they got one.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if anybody guessed no, but this is your last chance. Put it in the chat box. Yes, they got a deer.
I didn't see any no's.
They didn't get a deer. And let's watch and see. How did our opening day go?
Squirrel.
Classic squirrel move.
Pampas everywhere. Give me M&M's on the forest floor. Maybe we'll get an ET.
We're going to climb down and be all done. I'm wandering through the woods, trying to, you know, scout out a new spot to put up a new stand. My daughter runs up to the grandparents' house, which we're hunting behind their grandparents' house. She runs up. She's seen her grandparents, probably grabbing a snack because she dropped all her M&Ms. And I'm in the woods not 10 minutes after my daughter went into the house. And sure enough, one little deer wanders in front of our stand. Now, mind you, I'm like 100 yards away from the stand. One little deer wanders in front of our stand, broadside, 30 yards. Perfect shot. Totally could add some venison in the freezer. And I'm standing there. I don't even have the crossbow on me. My daughter using the crossbow right now. I don't have the crossbow on me. I, you know, had nothing. I'm just watching it going, well, yeah, of course that's how this happens. So we did see a deer, but didn't get one. It's okay. Opening day, beginning of the season, and we got a lot left ahead of us. A lot of adventures. So you can now come and guess if we're going to get one this season, because I know we are. We're definitely going to get one. If you are a homesteading pioneer, we're going to have a little bit of an after show, Homesteading Pioneer Hunt Camp. There's a link in the email I sent you, so check your email inbox. That'll take you over to the website, and you can join us on our Zoom. So you'll see Uncle Bourbon in the Zoom. You'll see me in the Zoom. If you're not sick of being on Zoom, we can talk a little bit more about opening day, early season hunting. I'd love to hear what some of you have planned for your hunting season this year. So please join us for that. For the rest of you, this was a lot of fun. I cannot wait. This series is just getting started. We're going to do it through October and into November, kind of follow along our season, talk hunting here on YouTube, on the podcast if you're listening later. Uncle Bourbon, as always, I love when you're at hunt camp. Thank you for joining us for this. If people want to follow you on social, see some of the other adventures you're up, you know, you're doing, where do they find you?
I would use On the Flycast. You got to put some underscores in there. We'll have to toss it up there or something, but yeah.
So on Instagram is the best place?
Yeah, On the Flycast. With the spaces are underscores, but you'll get it.
All right. So we'll post a picture in the Homesteady Instagram, and you can comment, and or just search On the Flycast in Instagram, and you should find Uncle Bourbon and see what he's up to this fall. And hopefully it's aligning with what we're up to this fall.
There's going to be some pike fishing, which is going to make oldest son number one going to be very jealous.
Yes.
But, you know,
still working on that.
We're going to throw some of these babies at some babies at pike.
That's a beauty. We should do a fly tying night too. Do a session while we're talking about fall fishing. You can tie some flies for us.
Just make sure you have some libations, and we'll
talk. Bourbon. Thank you all for joining us here on YouTube. We'll see you guys in the next version of this. Get on the email list. That's how you know when we're going to do these things. I warn everybody on the email list when we're going to do live shows at least a day in advance. Even if I don't tell you what time the show is going to be, Noah caught me on that. Thanks, Noah. So thank you all. We're going to shut the live stream down, and we'll spend some time with Homesteading Pioneers. See the rest of you next week.